show for February the 3rd, 2004, the day after Punxsutawney Phil took Punxsutawney Phil takes his annual trot across the town square and takes a look at his rotund shadow and determines our fate for the next 6 weeks, at least here in the United States, as the fable goes. It's February. Boy, January just flipped by at an amazing speed. Still sort of in shock as to how quickly the month moved by. But really great to be back from our travels, the Linux World Conference and Expo. For those of you who listen to the show live while we were out in New York, thanks for catching the show. For those of you who are eagerly awaiting the archives of those shows to go up, that's going to be happening pretty soon. I've already got the website for the archive built. I just have to talk it over with Kevin how we're going to implement that. Should be real coming along real soon, all of those segments. The vendors who got interviewed are really excited about getting links from their website up as soon as possible. So we'll get that done. But we're mostly all here. Arnie, at the last minute, had to run over to the school that he is working at and get involved with an in-service evening. For those of you who aren't aware of what that means in the teaching profession, that means basically he's going to be faced with about 2 or 3 hours worth of red tape and political nonsense. But that's just part of the deal in being a teacher. You just have to go through that about once or twice every semester. It's part of the job. But the rest of the panel is here tonight. How are you, Doc?
I'm fine. We're sort of gradually between houses here. We're moving next door. Where we've been doing renovation, but there's a lot of hurry up and wait. You know, the wrong rugs came, and other things like that. You know, just a whole bunch of stuff. So, but and we had rain for the first time this winter, I think, yesterday. So that's about all there is from news here. Other than that, it's down with work.
Yeah, isn't that good though that you had rain?
It is a good thing, yeah. It reduces the possibility of fire, which it doesn't in most parts of the country, but it does here. Yeah. So it was good to get that.
Okay.
Nothing interesting or anything, but that's what's going on there.
And how are you tonight, Russ?
Oh, hanging in. Things are going here, and very, very busy, which is a good thing. I've needed some of that for a while, but all in all, not bad.
It's a little scary here in Chicago. At least that's what I thought. Kevin may have a different opinion. I'll let Kevin express his own view. But we had pretty much continuous snow every single day for about the last week and a half, and didn't snow a lot each day, but just enough that it never went away, and has stacked up, and they've been plowing the streets every couple of days, and I now have a pile of snow sitting out in front of my house that's probably 6 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
So it's Chicago. It's February. That's just the way it is. How is it down by you, Kevin?
Oh, it was not bad until last night. You actually got like probably 4 or 5 inches, but up until then, it hasn't been bad.
Well, the one thing about Chicago is that if you don't like the weather or appreciate the weather you're getting at the moment, you know, wait an hour. It'll change by 40 or 50 degrees within an hour or two. And it's also amazing how, because of Lake Michigan here, people who are 10 miles apart can have a difference of feet in snowfall, just by a handful of miles. It's an amazing place to live during the winter time. But let's go ahead and jump on into the first segment of the show. We also have somebody who called in tonight as a guest, and so I'll go ahead and say hi to him now. Don't know why he called, but we'll just let him talk whenever he feels like talking. But hello, Eric.
Hello.
How are you doing tonight?
I called because you suggested I call.
Well, I didn't really suggest that you call. You and I talked on the phone early today, or was that yesterday?
Yes.
Yesterday. And I sort of got the feeling from the phone call that we had yesterday that you were going to call in.
Well, I check in semi-regularly because you seem to expect me to call up and raise hell.
Well, we could use some. There hasn't been a whole lot lately, so.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's your role in life. So should we go ahead and get the obvious question out of the way before we, you know, get into the various stories that people want to talk about? Did everybody see Janet Jackson's breast?
I tuned away just ahead of time because I was bored. I thought this girl hasn't been current in 10 years. And you know, it's funny because I had a thought when I saw her on there that I said she likes to take her clothes off. That, I mean, and she does that in her videos and other things like that. I mean, I almost know nothing about Janet Jackson except that she likes to take her clothes off. So, you know, but I mean, now if you go to Matt Drudge has some really good visuals. So you can see the metal instrument that's situated over her nipple with the cotter pin through it. But like I said somewhere that I wrote it, the whole thing was, you know, when I saw what little replay there was of it, it looked about as sexy to me as a brake job. So.
there's a funny comment on one of the blogs. Somebody put that picture up next to another picture from a well-known TV series, mm-hmm. and the caption underneath it says, "Why is Janet Jackson wearing a Borg implant?"
Yeah, that's great. That's what it looks like. Yeah, it looks weird, and on top of that, you can see, of course, that you know, there's a large subcutaneous bag of saline or something in there. You know, it's the thing that upset me about it was that all the hand wringers of the Federal Communications Commission have come out and like called for an investigation.
Yeah.
Give me a freaking break! I mean, it's such a nothing.
It's,
oh my God!
It's being dubbed as Nipplegate in the.
I think it's the new Salem bitch trials.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the other side of that coin, Doc, the thing that really got to me about all this is that they had the nerve to lie about it. That's the thing.
You mean the FCC?
No.
Well, it must be a slow news week.
It wasn't planned?
Yeah, you know, it was a wardrobe issue, blah, 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 blah. It's like, come on. You know, if you're going to push the envelope, at least have... You know, just a tad of intestinal fortitude to actually say, yeah, we did it. So what? Ha! You know,
but
you couldn't even get that. I mean, you know, no one's shooting straight on this thing, and it's just, it's just, God,
but,
please.
But there is something that we really do need to talk about in terms of the Super Bowl. The Super Bowl was perhaps. Although we may not really realize it yet, this Super Bowl may go down in the annals of the history of open source software as one of the most significantly important days because IBM was running Linux commercials during the Super Bowl.
Exactly 20 years after the infamous Macintosh
right.
Super Bowl commercial.
Right, right. Right. Look who's Big Brother now.
Yes. Yes.
But, yeah. And so it really is ironic that 20 years ago it was those Macintosh commercials against IBM, and today it's the IBM Linux commercials against Microsoft.
I missed it. Is it the picture of the scary-looking kid sitting in traffic?
Yes.
Yeah. It seems a little bit like The Shining to me. I don't know. It's like, here's Big Blue.
Yep. Well, for those of you who are junkies in the political races, here's some real hot...
Oh, yeah, what's happening?
Lieberman has now dropped out of the presidential race.
He was still in?
Yeah, this close to mind. Dorothy Parker, who, when told that Warren Harding had died, said, "How could you tell?"
John Kerry has been declared the winner in Delaware and Missouri, and Edwards has won in South Carolina. So it's looking bleak for Dean.
No, he's out. He's out.
He's gone.
And for Wesley Clark. He came in third most of the places he was running today.
Yeah. Those are all our buddies' work. Those two guys.
Now, notice the interesting pattern here that Democratic candidates are being polished off in approximate order of wackoness.
That's possible.
The craziest ones went first.
That's possible. I suppose Sharpton's still there.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah,
nope, forget my theory.
That's what I was going to say. I would think that the craziest one's being saved for last. Who knows? Sharpton's looking pretty good right now.
Yeah, forget my theory.
Is certainly the most entertaining.
And he has been since day one. That's the cool thing about it.
You know, this is actually a really sad commentary on the Democratic primaries this year, that in the company he's keeping, Al Sharpton looks like a class act. If you think about it, that's really scary.
Yeah.
Wow, yeah.
I was surprised. I mean, he'll be tarred forever by the Tawana Brawley thing, but for the most part, he doesn't make sense, but at least he speaks well without rhyming, which is what Jesse Jackson does.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I sort of like that rhyming thing.
Well, he's a local guy for you.
Yeah, he's a Midwest boy.
Is he?
And you know, that's something we like in Chicago, is we like our ministers to rhyme.
So, ain't we got anything better to talk about than politics?
I know.
Sure, we got tons of stuff. But as I was looking at the pictures of the Super Bowl, this thing just popped up on my screen. So let's go ahead and jump into some of the stories that we do have.
Before we do, I have to share a metaphor with you. How many of us here, by a show of microphones, shops at Costco?
I drive by it every day.
Oh, you don't shop at Costco? You have to know the Costco routine, because Costco sells these rotisserie chickens that are like outstanding rotisserie chickens, right? And
yeah.
And you never eat the whole thing. So what you have after a while is three or four chickens stacked up in the refrigerator. and you know, so you refer to things like, well, the third chicken now from the top may be getting a little stale. So I'm looking at the website and thinking of like old SCO news and new SCO news. It's like as something like Costco chickens. That's what they reminds me of. Anyway. So, go ahead.
Well, that's a great metaphor, but that's sort of the way I do it. I throw away the bottom couple of links each week and stack the new ones on
the top. It's kind of a FIFO buffer thing. A FIFO buffer for old SCO news. I try to keep my buffer like real small.
Speaking of SCO, we do have a whole series of SCO stories that we can just throw on the table all at one time and just generally talk about them as a group. Of course, we all know about what happened over the weekend with the virus coming to maturity. And last time I checked, which was about an hour ago, SCO's website was still down.
Well, it's down because they pulled the DNS records. And in fact, the article that's out there now, they go say they are down since Saturday night. Grocklaw talks about that. But yeah, the DNS records have been pulled.
Well, what Dorothy Parker said about Warren Harding.
That's right. I'll show you. You can't shoot me. I'll shoot myself first.
Well, how stupid did they actually do this? Did they pull the DNS out of bind, or did they just do it locally?
Well, apparently, if you do an NS lookup or you know what your favorite utility there, it ain't out there anymore. There just is no such domain.
That's a typical, really stupid move because it'll be at least a couple of days to get it back up again.
Well, what it is, they've renamed their website. I forget what it is, like thescogroup.com now. The interesting thing is that, and Grok Law, the articles out on our website that point to Grok Law.
Yep, that's what it is. It just went there.
Talks about this, that at first they're saying, you know, this is an attack to destroy their business, blah, 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 blah. And now the latest thing is they're saying, well, we don't really do any business from the website anyway, so we could just bring it up under a new name and, you know, it's just people looking for patches and information.
We're going to sue the Internet.
Yeah, they don't do any business from the website. What a stupid comment. They don't do any business.
Yeah, well, that's about it. You know, I mean, considering that some Chinese company that makes inflatable furniture is living and dying by their website, but this high tech company doesn't need a website apparently to do whatever it is that they do.
Yeah,
kind of an inflatable company.
Yeah, that's right. Middle of last month, Larry Augustin and I were just chatting, and Larry just made a prediction, just sort of popped out of his head out of nowhere. But he predicted that within the next month or two or three, but sometime within the next quarter, they're going to come to the realization that they aren't making any money off of anything that they are doing because everybody's fed up with them and nobody wants anything to do with them. So they're basically going to be faced with the decision of that it makes sense to fire everybody in the company except the SCOX division, which is the group that's handling all of the lawsuit.
How long will the stock float without a company?
Well, the whole stock, the stock price right now is based upon their most recent dog and pony show. And I don't know if you heard the details of the most recent dog and pony show, which was about 2 months ago, but they were putting on a presentation to major investors and the fund managers. And the focus of their presentation was, you know, just take a look at what a Liberty Investment could do if we win that $3 billion lawsuit. So basically what they were telling these people in the funds was to use SCO as a hedge, like they might put a dollar on double zero. I mean, that's the kind of mentality it is. It's they're throwing the dice, and that's what they were talking about in the Dog and Pony Show, is that they were the whole company's emphasis is on the SCOX licensing and winning this lawsuit.
You know, it's interesting that the crap this weekend about how the worm and the denial of service attacks. This has to be someone from the Linux community because they hate SCO. As you pointed out, there isn't anyone left who likes SCO. I mean, not even their former business partners like them. Their distributors don't like them. You know, it's like, how far do you have to go to find someone who doesn't have a grudge against them? You know, it's pretty amazing, and for them to even be able to use that logic that it's got to be the Linux community because they don't like us. Well, you know, God, we got to get in line. You know, it's a pretty sizable group that they've amassed of people who just have no use for them.
Yeah, could you imagine? Just imagine this for a minute of how difficult it is to become the most hated man in the IT industry.
To put it in perspective, he's managed to piss off more people than Bill Gates.
And the thing is, he did it in like a year. You know, I mean, Gates had to spend 20 years to get that title, you know, under his belt. And in a year, this guy just rolls right in there and takes the belt.
It's an accomplishment of a sort.
Yes. Of a sorted sort.
I've also got an interesting comment to pass along, and that I'd like Eric, if you would, to comment on this, because I know you've made public statements about how it's wrong if it is somebody within the community to do this kind of behavior, to do denial of service attacks against SCO. It is counterproductive if it's proven to be someone from the Linux community. But having said all that, here's an interesting couple of comments that were made to me over the last week, that there are administrators of major companies out there who have taken a look at this virus and come to the realization that this virus is a benign virus, in that it really does no damage.
If you're talking about my doom, I have been Joe-jobbed for the last week and a half. Don't tell me it isn't doing any harm.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
What have you been getting?
The virus is Joe-jobbing me. It's using my name to spam, and I'm getting all the bounce messages.
Oh, God.
Are you sure that's the virus that's doing it?
There are so many viruses out there that I can't track them very closely.
Because I don't know if if you're running Linux, how is it going to impact you?
No, you don't understand. The way Joe-jobs work, you don't have to have your machine affected to be a victim. What happened is I sent mail to somebody who has a Windows box.
Yeah.
The virus infected their Windows box. It found my name in the address book and is using it.
Yeah, well, that's true.
And it sends mail that goes nowhere, and then it bounces back to Eric.
That's right.
I have the same thing. And see, you know, this, you know, you can't say something harmless when it's busy running around pretending to be you and then having, you know, crap sent back to you.
So don't tell me it's harmless. I've had immense amounts of spam, bounces, and crap flood my mailbox over the last week and a half.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I've
got all that stuff filtered, you know, and anything that's, you know, mail server error, you know, there's a whole host of default replies that just go straight to God.
Yep.
At this point. I mean, if they're legitimate, it's too bad. They're gone.
Yeah, I don't even see those. I filter them out. But that's right. A couple of admins, and this is the comment that I was getting to. A couple of the admins that have come up to me and talked to me about this have decided that although it's a little bit of a pain in the ass for a couple of days, they really haven't been doing much about it because they thought that, how to put this in the proper context, that in the long run it was getting something done that they wished they had the guts to do themselves.
Well, those people are flooding my mailbox.
That's true.
Their negligence is flooding my mailbox, and I don't like it much.
Point well taken.
Yeah.
Point well taken. Now, Russ, you were talking earlier about the Rockwell article.
Yeah, there's two of them out there. Actually, there's now three of them out there worth reading. The new one appeared this afternoon. You can find it at Slashdot and other places as well, talking about the amazing Darl going to Harvard and talking about his joy there. And that's a very interesting article for a number of reasons. It's a lot of the same old stuff, but it does mention that supposedly they are claiming now that by the 18th of the month they will begin suing end users, particularly corporate end users. So, you know, the insanity continues and rolls onward. It's worth a look for sure. The other one, of course, the piece out there that's Grocklaw takes a closer look at the ABI files. That's on our website. That is one hell of a piece of work. That is excellent. Tracing down step by step the origins of various things that SCO has apparently, you know, maintained belongs to them, and basically illustrating that that Caldera either released the code or knowingly included it all inside its distributions. So it's a very, very tight piece.
Yeah, well, we've been talking about that issue now for, well, since last spring. And it's really taken that long to put all the facts together. Pamela and the rest of the people who are now working with her at Grocklaw are like little Wolverines in terms of the effort that they will spend and tracing down detail. And I know for one, I mean, you know, she's asked me to, you know, go through email logs and see if I've had any emails from a couple of years ago from anybody in Caldera, and to look for comments that would be supportive of the original contentions that they did all of this purposefully. And they did a great job on assembling detail and evidence, and I'm just week after week after week amazed by what they're doing over there. I'm starting to wonder what they do in their real lives to be able to afford to spend that much time on doing analysis, and I'm curious as to...
I have something to offer there.
I was about to say, Eric, do you know if they're getting any funding?
Well,
somebody like IBM or...
I know one of the major reasons that I spend what seems to a lot of people like an astonishing amount of time on this stuff. I never watch TV.
Yeah.
That's a huge time sink that is entirely absent from my life.
Well, I think that's true of just about, well, not all internet people, but a sizable chunk of them.
Well, I think that you should look in that direction for your explanation. There are many forms of popular time wasting that a lot of us simply don't do.
I suppose. Well, let's move on to another thread. I've got one that I'd like to throw on the table that is sort of ethereal, but Mosty had a chance to wander around Linux World Expo a week and a half ago, and I know what I saw that I thought was the very coolest things at the event, and I was just curious as to what other people thought as well. The things that I thought were pretty unique was the tablet computer that was being shown by LaCouris, a $990 tablet computer. For the listeners, actually the link for the tablet computer is not up on our site. I accidentally put the wrong link up. The link I put up was the link for the LaCouris Palm Zora that they got up, but the you can take a look at the tablet computer at the LaCouris website. Just go to LaCouris.com, and there's a little photograph of their tablet computer out there. I thought that was pretty unique. What about you, Doc? What did you see that was really
hard? Well, the main thing for me was just the vitality of the whole .org pavilion. What's interesting to me is if you look at it from season to season and from show to show, how much the companies come and go. Obviously, some stay, but the .orgs is still there, you know, and actually carrying the ball to a huge degree. That was sort of the main thing for me. Another one was just that I spent an awful lot of time with the Emperor people who do custom laptops, and so I'm using an IBM T40 laptop that they prepped for me here. It's really quite a nice box. I'm still getting used to it, but it's pretty neat. And so that was it. There's another thing too. I mean, it's something we talked about a fair amount there. I talked to a number of people about, which is Linux on a desktop, and more significantly, Linux on the laptop. I've just heard in the last several weeks a lot of people coming out of the woodwork saying it's definitely going to happen. IBM's working on it. HP's working on it. But especially IBM. I mean, I had people telling me that, you know, like Ted Show at the on the last Geek Cruise said that, you know, well, we don't really do the laptop thing, and we're leaving that up to the other companies. I didn't get a chance to talk to Ted there, but he wanted to talk to me, and I have a feeling this is what it was about. I don't know.
Well, I thought I told you that...
Yeah, well, you told me. Yeah, you told me at the show that an IBM guy came on and said something. What did he say exactly?
Dan Fry, and I've been...
Oh, that was Dan Fry.
Yeah, I've been trying to get to the tape so I can write down the quote.
Oh, yeah, get me that quote, because that I can just write to him and find out. But, I mean, that's...
Well,
yeah.
I want to give you the exact quote, but I'll dig the tape out tonight and get the
but quote. But you've tried to pin him down on any
I've been trying to pin him down for 4 years.
Yeah, I know. Well, he usually says, well, that's about my area, you know. But,
yeah. And he came out, that was segment number one that we did on Wednesday, the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
They were our first guests. Dan Fry, who's, of course, the director of the Linux Center at IBM.
Mm-hmm.
And along with him on that segment was Scott Handy, who is the worldwide corporate strategist for Linux. I love those kind of goofy corporate
titles,
you know.
Intergalactic
strategist. Yeah, I sort of teased him about it. I go,
Director of Interrelations.
Yeah, if you're doing this worldwide, when do you actually sleep? Do you sleep European? But anyways, Dan Fry said on that segment that the question that I've been asking for 4 years is now the answer is yes, and the time is now. They're developing them right now, and that they will be released not only desktops but laptops this year. And so it's underway, and there are right now inside of IBM 15,000 beta users of the IBM desktop. The IBM Linux desktop.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that's not people running Red Hat Linux or Woody.
Mm-hmm.
That's 15,000 beta testers of IBM desktop Linux. So I would consider that a concerted effort.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, well, this is an interesting way to go. I mean, I've. This T40 here, it's an 80 gigabyte machine, and I got it as a dual boot with Windows. And I wanted to, because I wanted to see. I almost never use Windows, so I thought, well, let me see what that's about. So, and the machine comes with this button that's called Access IBM. And if you're online, it goes in and you get to interact with the innards of this whole customer facing. UI for customer service, very complex but very rich. I mean, you know, I needed a device drivers or a device driver for the particular Wi-Fi ABG card that they put in here. It wasn't the one that came with it, and because I wanted to do Kismet, and Kismet wouldn't work with whatever the card was that they had in there in the first place, And it was pretty interesting to see that, and I thought, well, what's that going to look like with Linux? You know, are they going to match that? I mean, are they going to make this button work, or are they going to come out with some special Linux laptop that, you know, that's different in some fundamental way? I would think they wouldn't, but I'd be curious to know what they're going to do. By the way, I had a long talk this morning with Harvard Nord, who started Trolltech, And he was telling me that he was one of the guys who said that Linux on the laptop is definitely a happening thing. It's definitely good, coming along. IBM's doing it. Others are doing it. And he said something else, which is that there is an awful lot of demand right now, really fast growing demand for Linux desktops. That it wasn't even as recently as a few months ago, but we're starting to see it now. And partly it's cost, partly it's licensing, partly it's getting fed up over viruses and things like that. And part of it is just finally a degree of acceptance that there is an inevitability here. It's not quite GandhiCon 4. What do you call that, Eric?
GandhiCon 4 is you win.
You win. Yeah, it's not quite GandhiCon 4, but it's still a 3. But it's there. Did you guys know what we mean by GandhiCon 1, 2, 3, and 4?
Not really. No.
It's from the famous line about nonviolent civil resistance against a civilized opponent. This only works against civilized opponents. First they ignore you, that's GandhiCon 1. Then they laugh at you, that's GandhiCon 2. Then they fight you, that's GandhiCon 3. And then you win, that's GandhiCon 4.
So, yeah. So the fighting's still going on.
Yes.
I never did find out exactly what the Microsoft booth was doing at the show.
Well, it was very secretive for most of the week. They didn't take the blinders off the booth really until the last day.
Oh, really?
Let's get back to the .org for a minute. You said there was a lot of energy around the .org. And please, Russ and Eric and Kevin, jump in on this. This question is not just for Doc. This question is for all you guys. There was an unusual amount of energy going on at the .org pavilion. I think, I may be wrong, but I think that was because there was some damn mature projects being shown in the .org pavilion that were sort of surprising people in terms of some of the things that really are coming out of the grassroots. Of course, constantly, it seemed all day long, every day, there was crowds around the OpenOffice.org booth, and you'd sort of expect that. But there was this other booth in the .org pavilion. It was a hybrid of the New York Linux Users Group, sort of an offshoot of the New York Linux Users Group, which is called the New York PHP Developers User Group. And they have a group project that they've been working on with the rest of the membership of the New York Linux User Group, and that is this project that's called Clue. And this is a really great idea. And they're about to post a more stable beta than what they had available at the time of the show. But what this Clue project is to do is to take things like Mailman and IRC and those kind of common tools that we've used for years and years and years and years and aggregate them together with a single management tool so that you don't have to subscribe to the blog engine and you don't have to subscribe to the mailing list engine and you don't have to subscribe to an IRC room. You do it one time and you're done. And I think this is a great project that falls into that classification of collaborative tools. And it seems to me that like there's a lot of excitement going on in development of collaborative tools. It's going to sort of move its way out this year, I think. Did anybody else see any other interesting projects at the .org pavilion?
Sorry, I was concentrating on book signings and so forth, and I was only there for like part of a day. So,
how about you, Russ?
Well, I'm just trying to think. I didn't get a chance to spend much time. Actually, I didn't get a chance to spend much time in the booth at all. That was one of the more peculiar things about this show, was that I was otherwise occupied just about the entire time, between the Linux Show booth and stuff I was doing downstairs.
You were a busy little boy.
Very. The thing I made mention of this at the show, but I'll repeat it for folks who didn't hear it. The thing that got me was when I was doing my presentation. You know, I normally do kind of a show of hands thing just before we get started, just to get an idea who my audience is. And like many Linux World conference sessions before, the bulk of the people inside my session were new to the a Linux World show. Like about 75-80% were first timers, and that seems to have been the case whenever I've given a business talk in the last two and a half years.
Talking to the same 75 faces over and over and over again.
Yeah, it's a different group of people. But the interesting thing, the one that I didn't expect, is then I asked, now how many people are actually doing some sort of deployment right now? And to my amazement, it was probably 80% again that already had Linux in operation. In times past, it would have been, that the lion's share of the room would be either in the planning stage or in the evaluating stage. But no, these were people already had stuff going. And that's very different. Very different from past shows.
Yeah, well,
and that sort of thing where, you know, it's like people are trying to catch up. They were already using the technology, now they're trying to learn about it. That's kind of a new thing.
Yeah, that's a lot like it was at OSCON, the open source convention last summer. On the session that I did, probably the vast majority of the people there were from the world of business trying to figure out what to do, you know. I mean, they were not the usual suspects. They were not members of the church or anything. I mean, these are just guys that are trying to get some, you know, like, we're dealing with this now. This is what we're on. And let's move forward, you know. It's pretty interesting.
Let me throw one more product out there to talk about that I thought was exceedingly interesting, and that was a product by a company by the name of Net Integration Technologies. A lot of people know about Net Integration Technologies because the CEO, Ozzie Pepich,
yeah.
Ozzie's a really very bizarre guy.
He's an incredible guy.
Yeah, he really is.
Huge energy, yeah.
And you get excited when you're around him. He's just one of those really infectious people. And they had a brand new product that, they were showing people really the alpha of this product that was going to be their what they thought was going to be their next big phase in the development of their company. In the past, Net Integration Technologies has developed a lot of products that were CD-based, pre-configured distribution that you'd stick it in a CD-ROM drive and boot the computer up, and it would pretty much auto-execute. But what they were showing at the show was something called an autonomic Linux network chip. And basically what it was a little widget that you would stick into a IDE socket of a motherboard. And you would have this computer loaded up with a pretty healthy CPU and a significant amount of RAM. They were, suggesting in the range of 3/4 to a full gigabyte of RAM. And on this little widget was a flash RAM chip, and on it had a extremely tightly pre-compressed, pre-configured Linux distribution that was like, do you remember what it was, Kevin? Was it 32 megabytes in size? It was very tiny.
Actually, I think it was only 16 meg.
16 meg?
Pretty small.
But I thought the flash memory brought it up to like 64 meg.
I don't know. All I remember is being amazed it was so small and managed to get it to do some interesting stuff.
Was Ozzy there?
No, Ozzy couldn't make it.
Yeah, because I've been up to their place Toronto.
Greg Clement stopped by our booth and brought his little chip.
Yeah.
To show us that it really, really was.
I have to say, I have one of their net integration boxes here. It's pretty darn cool. I mean, this is not a current product. This is a year old now, but it's a backup drive for everything on the network. Both Linux and PC and Mac. It does a really cool thing. I have two lines coming in here. I've got a Cox Cable business line that is not encumbered. Okay. And it's 1.5 megs down and 0.25 up, but it doesn't block port 25 or do any of that kind of stuff. And it's got a bunch of IP addresses that come with it. But I also have Cox's regular cable home set up, and what it does is integrates the two, so they fail over. And I, in other words, I'm looking out at the net through this box at the combined speed of both lines. And it fails over from one to the other. It does some really elegant stuff. It is a little bit hard to set up, and I've had to have a technician come in here and help me out with it a few times. But it's got a web interface. It's pretty cool. It's a neat box, and it sits in my basement and does cool stuff. You know, they got a nice deal there. Just one of the most anonymous names on earth. That's their only problem.
Yeah, they need something with sizzle.
Yeah. I told him Ozzy. Ozzy's good.
Yeah, the Ozzy Technologies.
You know, or Pappage Technologies, you know. Come on.
Yeah, but I thought their new chip-based product was, in my opinion, the hottest thing I saw out of a commercial vendor the entire week.
Yeah.
And without exception. I thought it was the hottest thing.
What are you expecting it will be used for?
Well, what they're targeting it for is your small, and you know, let's be a little bit more specific because small business is a really gray area. You're probably looking at this as a device for a company that's a 6 to 25 seat range, where there's no technician in the company. You just plug it in, it works. You go to the web interface, type in the host names, and you're done in terms of configuring your LAN services.
Mm.
And so it's definitely, well, in my opinion, it doesn't look like it's really targeted to the large business.
No, their entire emphasis is they're too big for the home, too small for big enterprises. But they call them SMB, small and medium sized business.
Yeah, I would question even
the people who can't afford. You know, the thing is that they may have a system administrator, but they're for the company where you have a tech, but not it. It may not be full time, And they're going in for the sort of Microsoft migration customer as well. They've got a Microsoft Exchange replacement as well. How well that well works, I don't know.
I believe it's included.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the Microsoft Exchange product. Is that what he said, Kevin?
Pardon?
Wasn't the Microsoft Exchange clone included with the widget?
I'm not sure if that was on there or not.
But just take this as a mindset. You know, you got this widget. It's got a flash memory on it. This is drive independent within the server itself. Although somewhere out in the land, it's dumping files onto multiple hard drives, okay, as your backup. But really, for all intents and purposes on your primary server, there are no moving parts. It's pretty slick, and I was certainly impressed.
Yeah, the whole idea is that it's self-managed. You know, they something that's self-managed, self-healing, self-optimizing,
yeah,
that kind of thing. Whatever that is.
Yeah, whatever that means.
I hear something like that, and I just get scared that, you know, what happens when a robot dies, you know, but, apparently, I mean, when I talked to them last summer, whenever it was, they said, well, you can still get in and hack it if you want to. I mean, it's not like you can't.
Well, it's flash memory.
Yeah. But, I suppose you can still look at it. Maybe you can still do diagnostics with it. I don't know.
Yep. And their comments about they didn't use the term when the robot dies, but they said if the machine fails, you pull the widget out, plug it in a new box, and you're up and running within seconds.
Yeah.
And
interesting concept.
He said that they're, you know, although they're not recommending people to do this, people are going out to places that sell white boxes and buying $299 white boxes and plugging this thing into a $299 white box, and yet the little widget is selling for a couple thousand bucks.
They haven't gotten
control of their pricing yet because they're not making them in enough.
They've always sold to the sort of system integrator market. You know, they don't sell direct. In fact, the company that was there was not Net Integration, was it? It was somebody else.
No, it's Net Integration.
It was them. Shit.
Yeah, I talked to Greg Clement.
Because I went by there a couple times, and I have to stop and talk to them because I know them.
Yeah, no, I talked directly to Greg McClement, the VP of IT.
Yeah.
So.
Go look them up.
Yeah, but that was my take on the show. At least was. I was really impressed with Clue out of the .orgs, and I was without question impressed with what's going on with NIT. Now, a lot of people in the press, and that sort of takes me off to our new direction that we'll sort of use this as our last thread for the show tonight. And that was Novell. Now, I saw a lot of stories in the media. In fact, we got a couple of links up on our website tonight about what was going on the Novell end of the hall, because prior to Novell closing the deal with SUSE, SUSE had gone out and purchased a booth, and Novell had gone out and purchased a booth. So they ended up having these two big, huge booths pretty much side by side. And so there was, you know, quite a contingent of Novell / Zimian / SUSE people there. And but they were all off in one corner of the expo. So being that I was on the exact opposite end of the expo, I really didn't feel their presence much there, because, you know, the only time I ever got away to go to press conferences, the press conferences that I was seeing was IBM and Red Hat, or IBM and this, and IBM and that. In fact, I saw a press conference of IBM and SUSE, but I didn't see any press conferences of IBM and Novell. I know they had one. I missed that particular one.
Well, I noticed a great deal of thematic integration. They parked SUSE and Novell next to each other, and so there was a lot of SUSE green in the Novell booth, and there was a lot of Novell red in the SUSE booth. And they sat next to each other. I mean, besides that, they both seemed to be fairly well attended, you know. But they appeared to be quite independent companies.
Did you get any sense, or did any of you, if you got a chance to get to that end of the hall, did you get any sense, though, that Novell has yet changed their stripes, for lack of a better word, Milton's always been a very closed-mouth company. They just don't talk. And they're very unlike SUSE. They're always a very, you know, boisterous company. They've always been a lot of fun to associate with because they are free to talk. They've never been afraid of getting themselves into a little bit of controversy or a little bit of trouble. In fact, although I got two guys from SUSE to come on the show while we were there, I couldn't beg a guy from Novell to speak.
Really?
I was told point blank, you know, we're very sorry. We don't want this to come across like we are snubbing you. This is just the way Novell does it. That we're choosing to not do one-on-one interviews at this particular event. You are more than welcome to come to our press conference on Thursday morning, and I didn't go, but they wouldn't grant one-on-one interviews, or at least very many. We do have a link on our website of Mike Angelo from Mozilla Quest just badgered the people from Novell until they would sit down with him and talk to him. And but I talked to a number of people in the media that were having the same problem as I of even getting them to talk, period. And I find it interesting, another link we've got on the site tonight, that in the ensuing week from Linux World, we've already seen a major shift by Novell in that they have taken all of Novell Europe and put it under the management of SUSE's former CEO.
Mm-hmm.
That's a major step, yeah. I think. And so it's going to be interesting to see how Novell themselves will take to opening up a little bit. I'm really looking forward to actually going to BrainShare in March and just walking around and listening and talking and seeing how quickly it will take them till they clue up a little bit. And but they, historically, they've always been, you know, a very tight, you know, top-down corporate structure that you dare not speak because you don't want to misrepresent the positions of the company. Very, very foreign to you know, an open source type of company. But did you get any impressions at all, Eric?
I didn't. No.
No, you didn't. Russ, Zach.
I didn't get a chance to interact with them at all.
I just went and asked them a bunch of questions about Evolution. And then I got Evolution to break on the laptop. But other than that, I got it to break trying to open up some weird inbox files I got over from another machine, so it's probably not its fault. No. I mean, it was just straight-ahead stuff. I mean, they were there to sell. They were selling. There it was.
Yeah. I suppose. Okay, well, we are after the hour already, and I think we'll cut it off and call it a night. Unless, Eric, you were real gracious enough to join us. Is there a particular rant you have this week that you would like to bring to us?
Not this week, I don't think.
Is that time of week for you?
Oh, I've been in deep hack mode this week.
Oh, good.
So, not thinking about politics or industry stuff a lot.
Oh, that's good. Sometimes you just have to catch up on work.
Absolutely.
So, okay, well, we'll take that as a signal to just end tonight's show. I appreciate everybody coming by tonight, all you people out in the IRC and all you people who are just listening. Make sure that you take a peek at the Linux Show website from time to time over the course of the next couple weeks. I am starting to do some major revisions to our website in advance of some changes that we're going to be making. To those of you who have been donating to the by Kevin against NERF Fund. I just want you to all know that the fund is up to about $700. It's pretty good. It's going to be well spent. We have found a company to help us actually build our own Gentner. It's going to be sort of a hybridized, bastardized PBX from the company Digium. And we're in the process right now of emailing back in terms of changing specifications. This is going to actually end up being a lot more than we anticipated it would be in terms of functionality, because this is not only going to be a PBX and a hybrid, but this is going to be a combination in combination with a VOIP gateway. So a lot of the problems that we now have in balancing the sound from one person to another, we're going to be able to have control of the balance. But what's really cool with that built-in VOIP gateway, we're literally going to be able to take calls from anywhere in the world. This infrastructure change is also going to radically cut our monthly overhead by an enormous amount, probably on the magnitude of something around $1,500 a month in terms of reduced overhead. And so that's going to allow us to do more things in terms of taking more calls from more people and integrating that into the show. So it's going to be a lot of changes coming to the Linux Show over the course of the next several weeks, so make sure you stop by the website and check it out. But until next week, on behalf of the whole crew here, thank you for stopping by. We're out of here. See you next week.